All right. Well, we've come to our last set of fools. I say set just as a buy one, get one night. We're going to talk about two different ones. Just because he mentions seven, although there are five main ones. Last time we looked at the Kasil, that's the fool who is so self-absorbed that I call him the idiot from the from the Greek, meaning someone who's concerned about themselves or all wrapped up in themselves. That's what the technical. So idiots, you first fill in the blank there. And in the second lesson on the fool, the one that actually is translated as fool, we're going to consider the Evil and the Nabal. The Evil and the Nabal. Now, the Evil, we've seen a lot of the activity. The Evil has been mentioned several times because sort of the other fools have been compared to him or said that they talk like him. But finally, we're gonna meet him tonight. This word is found in some other passages in the Old Testament, but almost always in poetic passages. Almost always. And it's used extensively by Solomon in Proverbs. In fact, 19 times I counted that he uses the Evil in Proverbs. Now, we're also going to be introduced to the Nabal just at the very end of this lesson. The Nabal is much more frequent outside of Proverbs, much more frequent, but mostly in prose. That was the more common word for a fool, was the Nabal. But Solomon mentions him four times, so we're going to look at those four passages before we shut it down tonight. Outside is, so poetic, and so, let me back up. Your first film link is idiot, the next one is poetic, the next one is outside of Proverbs. Now, what can we learn about the Evil? It's kind of like last night when we were talking about the Solomon using a word. But the way he uses it is kind of a sarcastic usage. You know, the Kasil could be translated the confident one, but what he meant was the overconfident one, the overconfident. Kind of the same thing here with the Evil. His name comes from a word that could mean a leader. In fact, the Hebrew word for a ram, a male sheep, comes from this same root, being the one with the big horns and the bully in the flock, the big ram. And as he always talks about the Evil, how differentiate the Evil from the Kasil and from some of these other fools? He always talks about the Evil's mouth, his lips, his mouth, his tongue. And so I gather from that, he's the mouthy guy, the big obnoxious guy, loud obnoxious guy in the room. And so I call him the mouthy fool. But there's also a lot of pride associated with him too. So he's insolent, he's proud, he's mouthy. Mouthy is your fill in the blank. The next one, he is insolent, mouthy approach to life. Too much pride blinds this fool. Now, when we think about the Nabal, you just have to think about the quintessential one, the man who was actually named Nabal. His wife ended up being one of David's wives. We meet him over in the book of Samuel. And, you know, I guess you really got to be a fool if your parents name you that, or at least that's what everybody calls you that. You know, and you seem to wear it with pride, but what we learn about the Nabal is, for the most part, at least from Solomon, is basically the Nabal gets drunk, he acts badly, and thinks it's all great fun. He's just the low thinker. The idea behind the name Nabal, it comes from a root that means to wither or become flaccid, like a wineskin that has gone through the fermentation, and now it's like a helium balloon a week after the birthday party. You know, it's gone down, and the idea of sinking down or sagging or being weak, and so that's, you think about him, he's just kind of the weak-minded guy. He doesn't put a lot of effort into thinking. His brain, it It's the helium balloon a week after the birthday party. The Naval. Well, we'll talk about him at the last. Let's get into the Avil right now. The mouthy fool, as I call him, he despises wisdom. Well, that was kind of the Kasil despised knowledge. He says the Avil despises wisdom. Proverbs 1:7. One of Solomon's premise statements for this whole book: the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. You don't know anything until you know there is a God and you're not Him. I mean, that's the beginning point of real knowledge. You don't know anything beyond that. You know, once you get that foundation, now you can begin to build a repertoire, fill the storerooms of your brain with real knowledge, knowledge that matters. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but the fools despise both wisdom and instruction. They despise wisdom and instruction. I would translate the word instruction there as discipline, because that's we looked at that word earlier this week, and it means more than just, you know, just like verbal instructions or your wife writing you down a list of honeydews. No, it's more than that. It's the whole gamut of instilling discipline into someone's life. From, you know, yes, it can mean chastening, but it also means teaching and instruction and guidance and scheduling. Everything in the whole realm of bringing discipline into a life is kind of embodied in that word. And the Avil wants none of it. He despises that kind of structure. He despises someone trying to insinuate that he needs more, or he needs to know more, or that he doesn't understand enough. Your first fill in the blank there is afraid. The wise person knows that there is a God and is afraid. They fear God. That's the beginning of knowledge. We also learn later in Psalms, it's the beginning of wisdom as well. The mouthy fool, though, the Avil, he despises both wisdom and discipline. Wisdom. As I said, knowledge. Those are those facts. That when we have the facts, we're able to discern from those facts what the truth of a situation is, and how to wisdom helps us apply those truths to our situation. And, you know, beginning with a fear of the Lord, you can see how that makes that all move, kind of greases the wheels, so to speak, and allows that whole machine to run better. But if someone is already, they're dead set against the idea of needing wisdom, and certainly don't want any discipline added to life, you can see how knowledge isn't going to be much use either. If one does not, here's your fill in the blank, respect God, then the things of God will be despised as well. And you're a fool if you don't respect God. Now, it's easy for us to think, well, he's talking about atheists. He may be talking about people in the pew. I know a lot of people that could do with a healthier fear of God than they have, the way they behave and act, especially in God's house and around God's people. Chapter 16, verse 22. Understanding is a wellspring of life to him who has it. But the correction, and there's that same word again, discipline, but the correction of fools is folly. Understanding, I would translate that word prudence myself. It's a pretty common Hebrew noun. It comes from the same family that the word shekel comes from. You know, that's a unit of their money. Then you count. So the ability to count, to account for something, to reason through something, prudence. Prudence is a wellspring, literally a spring of life, a spring of living water, you might say, for the one who has it. you want understanding. You don't get an understanding by an education, though. You ought to get all the education you can and benefit yourself. But ultimately, understanding, real understanding, is spiritually imparted. You got to be in a position for God to increase your prudence, for God to increase your understanding. Because left to ourselves, we don't tend to want to understand the way the world really is. We just look at the way we think it is, and we think that's good enough. But if you begin, just begin to see that God's perspective is the right perspective, that becomes a wellspring of life to the him who has it. But to the contrary, but the correction or the discipline of fools is folly. And again, this is one of those coin flips. Is it the discipline that a fool gives into his own life, or is it the discipline that someone else is trying to interject into the fool's life? So you got to flip the coin. I went with the second one, but you got to consider both sides of that. Your first fill in the blank is logical. The ability to reason things out to a biblically logical conclusion is a continual resource to the person who can do it. As we said on the first night, thinking is a neat trick if you can do it. But the avil is not teachable. Disciplining a fool is insolent folly itself. Think about that. But the discipline of the avil is folly. Again, whether that's his attempt to discipline his life, or it's, you know, someone else's attempt to help interject discipline into his life. Either way, I can't tell you which it is, because it could be either one. Whichever one makes most sense to you, you just run with it. But I do know this: that's folly. He says that's the word folly here is eveleth. It's a form of the same word, of avil. So this is the activity of the avil, is folly itself. And I thought about this. Maybe he's talking about the fact once that one is. An avil has grown and gotten old, and you know, the old thing, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Why dare to believe you can change a fool once he is old? He's set in his ways. We know this. Proverbs 22:15 says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. That's that eveleth. Eveleth, that the foolishness, that mouthiness, that arrogance, it takes the rod of correction to try to drive that from their heart. But it's tied up in there. It's bound in their heart. We're born that way, unfortunately. Proverbs 17, verse 28. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. I think that's where Benjamin Franklin stole his little saying that we shared on Tuesday night. He was borrowing off of Solomon. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. Even an avil. When he shuts his lips, he's considered perceptive. You're filling blank his mouth. The mouth tends to declare the fool. Long before you see what he does, you hear what he says, and you think, oh, this person's not playing with the full deck, are they? Silence can mask, though, the mouthy fool. If he'll just be quiet, no one will recognize him right away. He can save himself. So, you know, that's good advice for all of us. Maybe we should do a lot more listening and a lot less talking. Chapter 29, verse 9. If a man contends with an avil, with a foolish man, whether the fool rages or laughs, there is no peace. Now, I want to kind of pick this apart. That makes pretty good sense, but that's nearly not what I see in the Hebrew. It's not a conditional sentence to begin with. And so let me just, and I'm not picking on the King James translators or New King James translators, because Hebrew poetry kicks my tail regularly. It's just not easy. So, you know, who am I to criticize? But let me just kind of tell you what I see in the Hebrew and tell you what I got out of this verse. A man of wisdom will judge, seems like it was the Niphal, or if I think it's Niphal stem. So that would be he's judging for himself. He, in order, there's a personal interest in this judgment. He will A man of wisdom will judge, and again, there's a personal interest in this judging, the avil, the mouthy fool. And then there's a, I think there's a progression. And what happens next after he judges him? And, you know, the word judgment doesn't just mean to be critical in your mind, but it means to pass a judgment. It means that you weigh the evidence and you make a decision. And so probably in making that decision, he says something to the fool. You're being foolish. What you said or what you're doing, that's foolish. And so the wise man thinks, I'm going to help this individual. I'm going to help him overcome his foolish position or his foolish situation. And I'm going to inject some wisdom here. And it comes across as criticism. I'm glad none of the men are looking up. You know, that's sometimes that's our, the way our wives try to help us. They try to interject some wisdom into our foolishness, and we think they're, you know, interfering, right? We fuzz up and act like a fool. Well, we shouldn't. But often the fool does. And so he says, whether the fool rages or laughs, there's no peace. That's the New King James. But I think there's a progression. So the judgment is levied or is felt. It feels judgy. But really, the wise man is trying to help the evil. But it causes, and literally he says, and so he will quiver. There are so many words in Hebrew that mean to shake. You got to kind of figure them out. But this word describes an agitated state. So the moment he feels judged, he gets agitated. And the progression leads from there to he laughs. And then he will laugh. And you might think, well, that's the end of it. Okay, he's just going to laugh in his face and say, oh, that's funny. You're going to tell me what to do. But no, Solomon says, that's not the end of it either. And next, there will not be quietness. That's the way I see it in the Hebrew. So this progression, it starts off with someone trying to help someone else by interjecting some wisdom into their situation. And the first thing he does is he gets agitated. And then he laughs, and probably not because it's a nice laughter. But after the laughter, there's no peace. In other words, it's on now. Oh, it's on. You meddled with me. It's on now. Your first sort of like is appropriate. A wise man may judge a foolish male and attempt to bring him to appropriate actions or appropriate thoughts or more wise thoughts. But the fool will at first be shaken at the interruption. He will be agitated at the interruption. Then he will laugh at such an attempt to curb his foolishness. But the battle has only begun because the fool will not know when to stop. As New King James says, there is no peace. There's no quiet after that. If that's you, if that shoe fits, change your foot. You don't want to be that person. We need to be able to be criticized. You need to be able to. In fact, we're told numerous times by Solomon that a wise man will thank you if you correct him. Will appreciate that. It's like, I needed that. I want to be corrected. I want to be better equipped to serve God. So, how well do you take criticism? The mouthy fool, in our next section, the mouthy fool gets into trouble. Gets into trouble. His mouth gets him into trouble. Chapter 10, verse 8, the wise in heart will receive commands, but a prating fool will fall. A prating fool will fall. The way I would translate that, he'll be knocked down. He will be knocked down. First one, Blake, is open. A wise person in their efforts is open to the commands of superiors. They're open. They're I'm here to serve, and this is what you need from me. I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to help. Not so the fool. The mouthy fool will let his lips flap until he is knocked down for insubordination. He will fall. The prating fool will fall. Prating has to do with the lips. And the Hebrew talks about the lips of the fool. Verse 10, just a couple verses later, he who winks with the eye causes, I know it says trouble, but that's not the word normally for trouble. It's a word that means injury. Injury. He who winks with the eye causes injury, but a prating fool will fall. There again, that mention of the lips again. But a prating fool will fall. Or again, will be knocked down. All right, y'all understand that. A group standing around and all of a sudden one of the group catches your eye and gives you a wink to let you know that they're about to do something, or there's a prank coming, they're about to say something. Somebody in that group is about to receive an injury, right? Someone is going to be made fun of or picked on, and so they've made you aware with the wink that the injury's coming. And so your fill in the blank is injure. A wink goes with a sneaky speech intended to injure, playful, usually not seriously. Usually it's a playful injury, right? Hopefully, especially among brethren, we're not really trying to injure each other, but the wink lets you know this is going to be in fun. This is going to be a joke. But a mouthy fool cannot take a joke without causing anger and his own injury. If you see the fool wink, you know somebody's about to really get hurt. You know, he doesn't have the wisdom or the intelligence or the kindness to do it right. And next thing you know, someone puts their fist in his mouth. Drop down a few more verses to verse 14. Wise people store up knowledge, but the mouth of the foolish is near destruction. Maybe not destruction, but that word refers to the feeling you get just before impending doom. That feeling of terror, that disaster is about to fall. So the mouth of the foolish. Now, whether the foolish realizes it or not, I couldn't discern, but maybe whenever you hear the fool talking, it gives everybody else a sense of terror. Oh, my. Oh, my. It made me think back to our seminary days. Brother Doug's made an allusion to our mission trip to Pennsylvania. Well, his missionary was from Pennsylvania. When he came to seminary, of course, we all treated him like a Yankee. And there was this one situation in which somebody in the before class was mouthing off, and Brother Gary, you know, said something that to a Pennsylvanian would just be understood as, you know, well, that would just be the appropriate thing to say. But what he said was, "Shut up already." I remember Doug saying, "Oh no, we're about to be a fight." You know, this is impending thing. Now, you know, that was just in Northeast, that was just a way of, you know, helping somebody realize they're talking too much and you need to pipe down. You're about to cross the line, right? Well, shut up already. But to a Southerner, that's like, those are fighting words, you know. It's impending doom, right? That's kind of what I thought about. That's what you feel when you're around and the insolent fool and his mouth is running. His mouth is running while wise people, what are they doing? They're storing up knowledge. They're listening. They're soaking in. They're storing up knowledge from the conversation. You know, sometimes it's, well, you know, knowledge, I won't ever do that. Sometimes it's, I need to do that. But, you know, the wise person, they're a sponge. The fool, he's a squirt hose, right? He's not taking anything in. Everything's coming out. All right. Chapter 11, verse 29. Did I get filled blank there? Wise people store knowledge. The mouth of the insolent fool stays near drought and disaster. That's what that word terror refers to, coming impending doom, and usually in a drought or some kind of disaster. All right, chapter 11, verse 29. He who troubles his own house will inherit the wind. Now, this is that word that means to trouble something. Troubles his own house will inherit the wind, and the fool will be a servant to the wise. So he compares the two. Somebody who doesn't have enough sense to realize that home should be sacred, that home should be a safe haven, that home is a place where, yeah, sometimes we rub each other wrong, but ultimately, at the end of the day, before you put your head on the pillow, there ought to be peace in the house, because home, that's a sanctuary. But the person who doesn't have enough sense to realize that, and they trouble their own home, and they disturb their own home, and they don't allow the peace of the home to ever settle, he said, that person's going to inherit the wind. Now, maybe sometimes that literally happens. They get cut out of the wheel. But More than that, it's just, you know, if you're always sowing those kind of seeds, you know, those breezy seeds, you're going to reap a tornado someday. It's not going to be pleasant for the person who doesn't have that much sense. And he compares that person to the Aviel. The Aviel will be servant to the wise of heart. In other words, because of his incapacity to understand, his incapacity or his unwillingness to be quiet and to listen and to learn, he's going to end up in a situation in life where he has to be told what to do every day, all day long. And he's going to, you know, he's going to end up having to depend on a wise person to guide him through life because he doesn't have the sense to do it himself. Let's get our fill in the blank here. Foolishness will remove one from the inheritance and even demote one to slavery. Slavery. Many a fool in our day has turned from a good, solid upbringing to addiction and crime. And addiction is a slavery. And there are other slaveries out there, but addiction is certainly one of them. Notice for the second time that the Aviel is the opposite of the wise of heart. He's the opposite of the wise of heart. Chapter 20, verse 3, it is honorable for a man to stop striving. I like that. It is honorable for a man to stop striving. Literally to sit out from it. You know, we say in English, I'm going to sit this one out, right? If someone tries to drag you into a fight, no, I'm going to sit this one out. I don't have a dog in this fight, and I don't want to enter one. Well, that's kind of the idea of the Hebrew here. It's honorable for a man to sit this one out, so to speak, to stop striving. Since any fool can start a quarrel. Now, I like the way they translate that. Let me tell you what the Hebrew literally says. But any fool or every fool can bare the teeth. Like it means to snarl, to growl. You know, just like we talked about the Kasil last night. If he sees a fight, he wades in. He wants to be a part of it. Same with the Aviel, apparently. His mouth, he begins to snarl and get into it. He sees a fight, he wants to be a part of it. Honor is your first one. Like any male who can sit out the opportunity to enter a fuss deserves an honor. But any Aviel can snarl his teeth and jump foolishly into a fight. Chapter 27, verse 3, a stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. You know, rocks, most rocks tend to be quite heavy, very, very dense material, and it's amazing how heavy one is when you drop it on your foot. Rocks, that's your first one length. Sand, I don't know if you've ever handled many sacks of sand. It's very bulky, and sand is difficult just to carry. But these are both light compared to the object of verbal abuse from a provoked fool. A fool's wrath, and the idea there is someone who's been provoked to wrath. A fool's wrath is heavier than them both. Abuse. So rocks, sand, and then abuse. Next section, the Aviel, the mouthy fool, spurns and scorns. So he's got some things in common with the with the lates, right? Fools mock at sin. We saw this, or at least a similar one earlier when we were studying with the other fools. But among the upright, there is favor. Fools mock at sin. The Aviel mocks at sin. He scorns. He does what a lates does. But notice it's just like last time. It's not the word for sin. It's the word for a trespass offering. A trespass offering. And hopefully all y'all were here when we talked about that. But that's that offering that could be made when one realized that in ignorance, that by mistake, they had offended in the holy things. And there was a list of things that, you know, that a person might do that would bring this kind of guilt upon them. It was inadvertent. It was accidental. It was negligent, maybe, but once they discovered their guilt, they, you know, now understood, I have guilt, and there was an offering, and it wasn't a cheap one, it wasn't a cheap offering, but there was a way to escape from this guilt that they incurred accidentally. And he says, the Aviel laughs at that. He mocks that. That to him, that's sport. Why would you know, you didn't even know you did it. You can't be held accountable for that. Well, you may back into my car after a while when you leave here, and you may not even know you did it because you got such a big rugged vehicle, but it still did injury to my car, right? Just because you didn't feel the bump doesn't mean it didn't happen. But fools mock at that trespass offering, especially the fact that there's not, that the only real victim is God and His holiness. Beloved, there's no greater victim of our sin than God and His holiness. And all of our sin, whether it's a sin of omission or commission or a sin of negligence, all of it should be taken seriously. It's not a sport. It's not a joke. So it says, but among the upright, there is favor or acceptance. Among the upright, there is favor. Your filled blank is offering. Insolent fools scorn the need for a trespass offering. See, Jesus is our trespass offering. We didn't even know we were sinners until the Holy Spirit told us, right? And how great to find out that God had a sacrifice that covered our trespasses. What's a trespass? It's when you get on the wrong side of somebody's property line, right? You're trespassing. We get on the wrong side of the line when we realize it. Christ is there to cover that offense. Chapter 15, verse 5, a fool despises his father's instruction, but he who receives correction is prudent. A fool despises his father's instruction, or again, discipline, but he who receives correction is prudent. The first field blank is parental. The Aviel spurns parental discipline. Spurns parental discipline. The prudent child keeps or guards any chiding from parents, any correction that parents may have. And he says that's prudent. Now, when you're 14 years old and you can't see past the end of your nose, it's hard to believe that mama getting in your face is going to bring prudence into your life. All you can see is that finger right at the end of your nose, right? But hopefully, in retrospect, you look back and think, she loved me. That's why she got that close to me. That's why she put her finger at the end of my nose. And that's why she told me exactly what she thought about me. And now I think the same about me, right? Now we get a little perspective in life that we ought to guard. We ought to believe that our parents love us and they're doing the right thing for us. Solomon's treatise on the Aviel. He had a treatise on the Casile. We looked at that last night. Now we're going to look at his treatise on the Aviel. This is like the previous one. It kind of begins with a foundation. Here's the foundation. Verse 14. A man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth, and the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. Now that's the foundation. There's no mention of a fool here. This is the foundation of a good life, a solid life, a life that has a foundation that can be, you can build on that foundation. A man will be satisfied with the good by the fruit of his mouth. Fruit implies maturity, implies that there was growth, implies that there was a seed planted. Now, I'm going backwards, right? You understand that? If you've got a fruit, somewhere in the past, somebody planted a plant in order for you to enjoy the fruit. Well, a man will be satisfied with good by the fruit of his mouth. And the recompense of a man's hands will be rendered to him. All right, so Solomon began his treatise on the Aviel by pointing out the value of a man's hands and mouth. His hands and his mouth. I don't know how ladies really, you know, break the ice and get to know each other. They they have their ways. But for a man, he looks another man in the eye and says, what do you do? What do you do? What does it mean? What are your hands occupied? You know, that's how you identify. That's how you break that. That's how you get to, oh, okay, well, now we got some common ground. You know, that's, and so he says, look, what a man does and what a man says is his calling card. That, you know, and if he's doing it such a way that he's sowing good seed, he will be satisfied by the fruit. But the opposite can be true also. The things that he says and the things that he does with his hands and the way that he does with his hands can also bring some bitter crops to the table that are dissatisfying extremely. Your first fill in blank is fruit. A man who sows good seed with his mouth will eat good fruit in time to come. You got to be patient. You got to be patient. It takes a time. You can't just say, "Well, I turned over a new leaf last month, and I'm still getting all this. I'm still eating hay." You know, it takes a while for fruit to come to fruition. So be patient. Keep sowing good seed. And you've heard the old saying that it's not what you know, but who you know. Listen, there's a truer statement, at least from a biblical perspective. It's not what you know, it's not who you know, but it's how they know you. How they know you. You say, have your words and actions left a good impression? Many times, the impression we leave on people can either make or break any opportunity that we have to share Christ with them or to be a mentor to them, to disciple them. It matters when you first meet somebody how you act, and second meet them, and third meet them, and so on. It matters how you talk. It matters how you do, what you do, the way you do it. And Solomon said, that's the foundation. Now let's talk about the fool. Impression was your last film, like that section. Excuse me. Verse 15. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes. So he thinks he's sowing good seed. He didn't bother to check with the Word of God to see whether that was really good or not. But in his mind, this is the right thing to do. This is the right thing to say. And so I'm going to do it. I'm going to say it. The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but he who heeds counsel is wise. But the person who realizes, you know what, I need something outside my own intelligence because I realize I'm not as intelligent as I ought to be. Well, that's a great place to get to in life, to realize I'm not as smart as I sometimes think I am, and I want some counsel on this, especially biblical counsel. Your first fill in blank is right. The mouthy fool believes his own cocky speech. He believes that his way is the right way. The right way. The fool thinks that he has no need to receive direction or further instruction. Certainly doesn't want any counseling. Verse 16, as we continue this treatise on the Aviel, a fool's wrath is known at once. Maybe at once is a bit strong, but it literally means in the day, in the Hebrew, in the day. Somewhere in that day, it's going to come out. If he's mad, everybody's going to know it eventually. But a prudent man covers shame. The Aviel, the fact that he's been provoked, the fact that he's been angered, will be known somewhere in the day. But the prudent man, he covers a disgrace, a shame, something that causes disgrace. I found it kind of interesting that the word that's translated prudent here is the same word that was used to describe the serpent in chapter 3 of Genesis. Now, the serpent was more subtle than any creature of the field. Same word. It can have a negative or a positive. Obviously, this is a positive implication. It's negative when it's used of Satan, but positive when it's used of, in this situation, prudent. To do what? To cover a disgrace. The mouthy fool lets you know. Here's your fill in the blank. No. Lets you know right away if he's angry. Early somewhere in that day it's going to come out. But the prudent person, well, it could also be translated crafty, depending on whether it's positive or negative, right? But the prudent person will just blanket a disgrace or a provoking statement. What are you going to blanket an offensive statement with or an offensive action with? You blanket a disgrace with grace. Grace is your first fill in the blank. Grace and love are good blankets to throw over a disgraceful treatment. Isn't that what Jesus said to do when someone insults you? Someone mistreats you, someone persecutes you, turn the other cheek, love them, pray for them, bless them. And what do you say would be the end result? You'll heap coals of fire on their heads, right? You'll heap coals of fire on their heads. So instead of being ready to fuzz up and get mad and roll up your sleeves and let, you know, just forget you're a Christian and just let the redneck show. Instead, we need to cultivate the ability to cover something. Cover it. Cover it with grace. Forgive it. Yeah, it stung, yes. It hurt, yes. Don't dwell on that. Remember that we're here to cultivate relationships that lead people to Christ. Not to get an ounce of flesh every time we feel like we've been offended. Well, that offends me, brother. Why? Yeah, it hurts, but why should you get offended when you've been forgiven so much? When you've been forgiven so very much, how could you not forgive your fellow servant his little sin? All right, that's the Avil. We're going to spend a couple minutes here looking at the Nabal. Proverbs 17, verse 7, excellent speech is not becoming to a fool, much less lying lips to a prince. Excellent speech, to me, is a bit of a reach. The Hebrew is weird. It's poetry. So literally it says lips of a remainder. And what I find, I've come across this kind of phrase before. By remainder, usually it means what's left over. And I think it was Kyle and Delitz that helped me kind of sort through this and figure it out. Kind of boils down to this. It's not fitting or becoming for a fool to have the last word. Y'all with me? You know, really, the last word in any argument should come from this. Because that'll be the last word. If you can settle your argument by saying, well, you know, the Word of God says. And, you know, and regardless of how I feel about it, the Word of God says, man, how much better. But the fool wants the last word. When I think of that, I think of that Mark Lowry, the Christian comedian. I think he also sings with the Gaither Quartet. But he's silly. He was talking about his mother. His mother always had one wish. She would always say, one of these days, Mark, I'm going to have the last word. And he would say, and I wanted her to have the last word, but every time I tried to let her have the last word, something brilliant would pop into my head and I would have to say it. Right? Something brilliant, he thought. Something arrogant and mouthy and teenagery that his mama could live without, right? But I guess that's why he's a comedian. He would think of something brilliant, something sassy to say, and here it would come. He really wanted Mama to have the last word. Well, you know what? That's the fool, the Nabal. He should not have the last word. That's just not fitting. And something else that's not fitting. He adds to that, and of course, the second one is always the greater point. Much less lying lips to a prince. This is not the word tsar. This is not the normal word for prince. This is a word that refers to some sort of a leader, usually a wealthy person, who was in a position to be a benefactor, someone who was in a position of to influence for good and to help. And he said, much less, it's much less becoming for somebody who is in a position to benefit or help to be benevolent, and they are liars. I found that something worth chewing on. You're filling blank there is last. The fool should not have the last word on a dispute. The second one is it is equally unfitting, if not more so, for a nobleman, some generous benefactor, to tell lies. If someone is depending upon you for your good character, for your graciousness, to help them in their need, and it turns out that you have no character, at least not when it comes to keeping your word or doing what you say, that just ruins everything. It's important, A, that we not try to have the last word, but much more important that we have a true word in our mouth. Otherwise, people will not want our help. That's serious. When people don't want your help, they don't want your gospel either. Don't be a Nabal. Verse 21 of chapter 17 says, he who begets a scoffer does so to his sorrow, and the father of a Nabal has no joy. The scoffer, that's not the word late, that's the word kasil. It's the idiot in the Hebrew. Raising an idiot is indeed a great grief, but a Nabal can just suck the joy out of parents. Remember, you can teach an idiot with a stick. I don't guess you could teach a Nabal with anything. Joy. Grief and joy. You're filling blanks there. We're just going to look at part of this proverb here, but the part that refers to the Nabal, we find in chapter 30, verse 21, for three things the earth is perturbed. Yes, for four it cannot bear up. For a servant when he reigns, a fool, a Nabal, when he is filled with food. Three things that just perturb the earth, just disturb the earth, and four that it cannot bear up. When a servant reigns and when a Nabal is filled with food. This is from the words of Agur. Agur declared four things that are very upsetting to a land. Land is your first fill in blank. One of those things is a Nabal satisfied with bread. You see, when the foolish have plenty, it's harder for consequences to educate them. By the way, look at Americans. We have more food than any other country and probably more foolishness as well. Hard times will make you get smart. They'll make you, you know, learn a whole lot of things that you ought to know. When you think about someone who's born with a silver spoon in their mouth, how often are they good, kind, gracious, beneficial, humble, meek servants? Y'all are all staring at me. What usually happens here in America when someone's born with a quote-unquote silver spoon in their mouth, or they suddenly come into a lot of money, you know, they don't become great people, do they? They become foolish. Foolish and selfish, become more. They've got more than they could possibly spend in a lifetime, and yet it makes them more selfish. That's foolishness. That's being a Nabal. So when a Nabal is satisfied with bread, that disturbs the land. He really needs to be hungry, because then he's a little more educational, or a little more able to be educated. Last one. Save the best for last. If you have been foolish, okay, here's the invitation. Out of these seven fools, if any of them fits you, if the shoe fits, here's what you do. If you have been foolish, and that's based on the word Nabal, in exalting yourself, or if you have devised evil, put your hand on your mouth. For as the churning of milk produces butter and the wringing of the nose produces blood, so the forcing of wrath produces strife. Forcing of wrath, it's the same word for squeezing a nose. You squeeze somebody's wrath and it's gonna get on you, right? If you've been foolish, you know, that's, hopefully, no one has been the least bit convicted from these lessons and you've just come out scot-free. But if not, you know, if something here you thought, yeah, that's something I need to work on. Yeah, that's probably something I do. Oh, that sounds like me. Or at least my wife thinks so. She's elbowed me three times. You know what? Then here's what he says, dude. Get your hand on your mouth and shut up. You know, stop talking. That's step one. Stop talking. And get a hold of yourself. If you have been foolish, you've exalted yourself. That's foolish. Humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God. He will lift you up. Right? If you've devised evil, if you have proposed in your mind and your heart something that you know is wrong, that's foolish. Put your hand on your mouth. Stop talking. Stop planning. Get things turned around, because just like you churn milk, or at least you churn cream, you're going to get butter. You twist your nose hard enough, it's going to bleed. What you're doing is going to bring wrath down on you. And it may not be the wrath of the person sitting next to you. It may be God. God may have to come deal with this fool. Because the scriptures tell us that the Lord loves and therefore he chastens every child whom he receives. All right. It's been a joy. Thank you all so much for letting me be a part of your Bible school and for your listening and for your generosity. I'm going to turn things over to Brother Matt.
When you get a chance later tonight, find in 1 Samuel what happened to the fool who lived up to his name, as Brother Keith said. God took care of him, to use our language. We don't want to be foolish. We want to be teachable. Brother Keith has mentioned all these different guys. One thread that ran throughout is they won't listen to the Word of God. They're not teachable. We want to be teachable. We want to listen to instruction, especially from God. If we won't, then we're the utmost fools. Thank you, Brother Keith, again for this week and for all your time and your study. Appreciate your willingness to be here with us tonight.